The Taliban's takeover in Afghanistan has wiped out a quarter of the nation's economic growth. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. A report from the United Nations Development Program says it took less than 1 year to erase $5 billion of economic output in Afghanistan. The Taliban's restrictions on women's work has eliminated progress that's been built up over the last decade, as the BBC's Charles Haviland reports.
The UN Development Programme says Afghanistan has suffered a catastrophic economic collapse in 14 months. It said the Taliban's restrictions on women in the workforce have meant a 5% cut in national output. The price of a basic food basket has risen by 35%, and 19 out of 20 Afghans now live below the poverty line, with a fifth of children at risk of severe malnutrition. Before the Taliban takeover, three-quarters of government spending was dependent on foreign aid. This income is largely suspended since the seizure. The UNDP says it is working to create 2 million new jobs by working with local communities and female entrepreneurs and reviving the private sector.
That's the BBC's Charles Haviland reporting there. Checking the numbers now, oil prices are up slightly on the session following OPEC's decision yesterday to slash production. Stock benchmarks in Europe, meanwhile, are a little changed this morning. European leaders are assembling in Prague today for the first meeting of a new club of nations called the European Political Community. Its goal is to create a more comprehensive regional dialogue, but the BBC's Jessica Parker tempers expectations for any concrete action that might follow.
The European Union is obviously this 27-member club that has huge institutions, the European Parliament, the Commission associated around it. It's an economic grouping as well with its single market. This is a much looser structure. In fact, there is no set of institutions or staff associated with it. It is basically just over 40 leaders talking about some specific issues that countries have expressed interest in, so security, energy, and migration, and they will look, we're told, for ways of cooperation. And then the idea is that this group could meet up to twice a year. And I think part of the idea, Emmanuel Macron, the French president, really has pushed this thing through, is to try and enhance broader cooperation beyond the European Union on key issues, especially following Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
What kind of teeth, Jess, will this new group have? Can it, for example, impose sanctions or club together to really take any action that it sees fit?
I don't think we're expecting it to club together to impose sanctions. The EU has been doing its own because it's an economic bloc. Turkey, who's attending, notably didn't follow Western sanctions. There's been criticism of that, but Turkey is showing up today. We don't really expect, although we'll have to wait and see, really solid outcomes today. And I think there are concerns and some scepticism that this could be a bit of a talking shop. But I think the idea is to pull certain countries, whether it's Turkey, whether it's Azerbaijan, whether it's other countries as well who are really keen to join the European Union, such as Ukraine or Georgia or Moldova, try and pull them all towards the European sphere and away from Russia. So I think that's a kind of really broad political intention.
The BBC's Jessica Parker for us in Prague. Thank you so much for breaking this down.
You're very welcome.
To Iran now, where 3 weeks of fierce protests that have gripped the nation are now posing serious challenges for the country's leadership. Rights groups say thousands have been arrested while demonstrating the death of a woman last month who was detained for not properly wearing a headscarf. Hundreds have also been injured in a crackdown by security forces. As a result, the EU's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, said this morning the European Union is now considering new sanctions on Iran. But the BBC's Jair Gol explains it's hard to imagine how much further already punishing sanctions could go.
If you ask someone what kind of sanction could be imposed on Iran, people say, is there anything left? The biggest source of income for Iranian is the sale of oil and gas, which Europe needed right now. But at this point of time, obviously, it's numbers of years, there has been a severe sanction of those sectors because of Iran nuclear activities and missile programs in the region. And this has affected the economy tremendously and crippling the economy.
We've seen huge protests across Iran for the death of this woman who was allegedly wearing her headscarf wrong. But we've seen protests earlier this year and in past years about the economic situation. So are the two sort of melding together at this point and sort of reaching a boiling point?
I think definitely one of the main reasons people are coming to the streets, the management of the country, whether it is the economy, freedom of choice, freedom of expression. I mean, there's so many different reasons, but certainly economy and sanctions play a role because so many people who are in the street. They have nothing to lose, particularly young people. There's no job prospect for them. Maybe 30, 40 years ago, they would say, okay, if we are, just be quiet and do not oppose the regime, we may be able to get a job in the government, because most of the jobs are, the biggest employee in the country is the government. But right now, there is no job in the government. The government is even have a hard time to pay the salary of teachers and its own employees. But despite this, sanctions, just a few days ago, MPs proposed to raise the salary of security forces. The very forces are cracking down demonstrators.
And on that topic of salaries, the country's welfare ministry said the top 10% of households receive 31% of total gross national income, while the bottom 10% gets about 2%. And we've sort of seen this erosion of the middle class in Iran. What does that mean for those who are leading the country?
That's a big question. Whether do they really have any program? What's going on? Do they understand the gravity of the situation? Look, many factories are closing. They can't get raw material for them. Thousands of workers, they haven't been paid, or they are being paid less while the inflation is rising rapidly. We don't see any concrete plan by the new president of Iran who came to power just almost a year ago. We haven't seen anything. I think the main priority for this government, it seems, keeping the system in place, is ideological government. And those people who are in charge of economy, they are not professional. They are not people who have a vision. Say, okay, I come take over the Ministry of Commerce with A, B, C, this plan I want to implement. No, it's not. It's the ministers are chosen based on their loyalty to the supreme leader.
So do you think these protests will force a regime change? That's the ultimate goal, right?
That's something most of the protesters and opposition are hoping for. But what we have seen, the supreme leader of Iran a couple of days ago came out defiantly, actually. He said, those teenage girls and boys on the street must be punished. And we didn't see any sign of retreat on his side, but his voice was crippling. We could see it is not the supreme leader we knew in the past. They know they have a problem. This time around, they are facing teenage girls and boys. These are the generation they have been educated in their Islamic educational system set up by Islamic Republic of Iran. And we see millions of them pouring in the street. They say, no, we don't want Islamic Republic. This is a kind of generation I think Iranian leadership are facing. And what they're trying to do is suppress the uprising and the protest.
The BBC's Jira Gol. Thank you so much for breaking this down.
Thank you.
Well, you can keep tabs on that developing story on our website, bbc.com/news. For now in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.